Major Hun, Reel 59. You were saying that you took your squadron out on a very, very cold weekend and there was black ice everywhere. What were you trying to do with them on that exercise?
Well, the regiment was going out on exercise. That was planned before the real black ice came. It was rather funny, really, because I had all my squadron sort of lined up on the square, and the Colonel Robin, was commander, and he said to me, well, are you going to take the squadron out, or are you going to, you know, do you think it's too bad? And I thought, well, that's a test. I mean, if I said no, I'll call it off. I had the choice. I think I was a bit of a wimp if I, because it was about 14 below, I think it was bitterly cold. And I thought, well, having the way he put it, I couldn't say, oh, well, all right, I'll cancel it, I won't go. But the vehicles were sliding everywhere as you went out until the training area. And some of the tanks, two of the tank squadrons didn't go out. The one that was already out, the tracks were frozen into the ground. The devil of a job to do. And we sat out for, I think, two nights and couldn't do anything because the ground was so cold, and eventually we decided that we'd go back in. But it was so cold, bitterly cold. And I'd say we'd have been better off in barracks, but there it is. We weren't sure when the exercise was planned what would happen. So, I think everybody was glad to get back.
What sort of functions were you exercising when you went out with your squadron or on a regimental exercise?
Well, the tank squadrons would do their normal sort of tank training. It was a regimental exercise. And the tanks would have been out, and we were there to back them up in the normal sort of supply administered things. The LAD was under me. I could push them out if anything was needed, and it was just a normal sort of regimental exercise with the support from HQ Squadron.
It would appear on... Sorry.
And at that time, you see, we also, in HQ Squadron, we had the recce troop of scout cars was in HQ Squadron, and we also had the helicopters. I think there was three at the time. Gazelles, I think they were. I think that was at the time when we had Gazelles. And so they were all there, plus the LAD, medical, and all the other sort of bits and pieces.
On first looking at it, it seems that commanding a headquarters squadron would be really rather more complicated than commanding a tank squadron, because you
it
have
is really
more functions too.
Yeah, well, there was the number in the squadron, I think, was between 250-300. When I was in Oslo. We also had the band, which was in HQ squadron as well, which a band then was about 60. Although they more or less manned themselves, all the admin side came under HQ squadron. And there's all so many different bits and pieces. The MT, the LAD, helicopters, reconnaissance troop, the paymasters department, all that came under. So quartermaster department, all were in HQ, so you had to sort of had responsibility for all the men, although like the QM did all the QM side and the tech quartermaster did his side, but the men were still yours, and that was your responsibility for whatever went on with them.
What was the role of the helicopters? What were they used for?
They were used by the colonel or whenever any squadron wanted any reconnaissance. Yeah, it was when they first started, you know, having helicopters in regiments, and I think they were trying them out as forward reconnaissance of the tanks.
Do you think that they were useful for reconnaissance? Or
yeah, I thought they were very good. I went up two or three times in them. And, you know, you could hop around the hills and pop up, have a look back again or whatever. I thought they were excellent. And I know later, we didn't know at the time, but later.
later with the right sort of cannon on board, they're ideal.
How was their administration done? Did you do all their repair and maintenance within HQ Squadron, or did they have a separate line back to?
No, the helicopter, we had certain fitters in there for the helicopter. I think we had a couple of naval chaps attached to the squadron with the helicopters. But of course, if there's anything major, that would have to go back to an aircraft.
Who flew them? Were they Army Air Corps?
No, they were our own officers.
Your own officers?
Yeah. I think we had one sergeant flying one, and we had a couple of captains who were flying.
And how do you know where they've been trained for this sort of work?
I think they went back to Netheravon or somewhere like that for
the Army Air Corps Centre.
Army Air Corps Centre to be trained. And it gradually got so we had sort of quite a number in the regiment who were helicopter trained.
It sounds as though the regiment was becoming something of an all-arms grouping, including its own air component.
Well, with that, we also had on the scout cars, we had rockets. What were they now? Not signed by them, what would they have been at that time? When they first, the rockets started to come out, which would operate from the, and some of them were on wires.
Yes, guided weapons.
Yeah.
Yes.
We had those, so we were building up to quite a...
Would that have been tow at that time?
I don't think so.
Not tow, not
no,
hot.
I think that was something...
Something earlier.
Quite early, yeah, when they first came out.
Milan was another system, wasn't it? Milan,
I think that was later too.
That was later as well.
Yeah, I'm talking about 1964, 65, 66 time, I think. I think these other sophisticated ones came out much later.
What kind of vehicles did you have for the recce troop? That must have been rather close to your heart.
I think they were ferrets. I think they were ferrets. I don't know whether you had any Humbers there, but I've got a feeling that they were ferrets. So. Yeah, so that was nice having them. You know, because I used to think to, you know, if you were commanding a recce troop completely and going out doing the recce job, that'd have been a, you know, job more after my own heart, which I would have enjoyed. But I think the colonel got me back because I had this jolly good job in the delivery squadron. And when Colonel Brockbank took command, he said, right, he saw me, he said, I want you to come back to the regiment, because he knew then I could look after the admin side of the regiment. And he would be happy. No, he didn't have any worries, which is understandable. If you've got a commander, he's going to pick his men who he knows he can rely on to do particular jobs. That's the reason I came back, actually.
When you were doing this job, commanding the recce squadron, the headquarters squadron, did you spend most of your time sort of in the office doing administrative paperwork, or were you out and about?
If they were on exercise, I went out with them. But when other people were doing training in the barracks, of course I would be in my office. But the other thing I used to do, when the paymaster went on leave, that was a regimental paymaster, he was Royal Army Pay Corps, I used to take over the whole thing from him. And ran the whole of the accounts if he went away for a fortnight or a month. I would do that in addition to my other job. So that was another thing. The colonel was quite happy to get somebody who... And I used to volunteer for different jobs, like if they wanted to do audit boards. I'd say, all right, I'll do it. Different squadrons had their own accounts, and they had to come in, and I would do the audit. And if I was a particular stock-taking thing, a complete squadron had to sort of check every year, I'd say, all right, I'll take it on and I would do that. Any job that I could do in addition to mine, so I didn't get bored, I would volunteer for.
Sounds like you might, you know, have been at risk of getting bored just doing routine day to day.
Well, I avoided that by taking on lots of
other things.
Jobs.
Who did the routine then when you were doing these audit boards and other stock-taking jobs?
I did at the same time.
You did at the same time?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the normal thing, the morning parade, apostate, squadron orders, all those sort of things I could do, and also do my other job. Mm. And I used to love doing it. I had a captain who was second in command, but he was more keen to play polo.
Oh, was he?
The stables. Mm. So, I mean, I didn't miss him at all. Really. Mm. Yeah.
What about your sergeant major? Wasn't he an important part of the team?
Yes. I mean, he was good for discipline, and whenever there's anything special that I wanted him to do, I just say, right, you get on with this. And also, when we had our admin inspections, you see, there was not only... I had to check on all the departments to make sure that you're right, because it ultimately came down to me, like all the MT. I had to go and check all the vehicles, you know, spot checks to say, all right, your battery's all right, is this all right, and that, because the colonel would come around eventually and check. And then the teams of the admin teams would come. And of course, if anything was found to be wrong, the colonel would say to me, well, did you check that? You know, why did this happen? You see, so I had all that sort of thing to do. Take men out on the range shooting.
Were these checks randomised? Did you do them in a routine way, or did you just turn up?
No. What I used to do, I'd know when the particular admin inspection was going to be. So about a week before, I'd say, right, I want all the three tunners lined up. And then I had a system which I would know, which anybody would check, you know, first the cleanliness, and then are the batteries topped up, the water, the logbooks up to date, the tire pressures right, and all the little things that at the time I knew. And I'd start at one end and spend the whole afternoon and check every vehicle. Next day I'd say, right, all the Jeeps and things like that. Well, they should have already been done by the MTO. But, I mean, it was still my responsibility to make sure that he'd done his job.
It was a matter of supervision.
That's right. Mm. So it was a matter of doing that. And I went through all the vehicles that way. And then, of course, there was all the documents that had to be checked. Mm. Although the MT is ultimately responsible for looking after that side, it still comes back to me if we get a bad report.
How many vehicles, roughly, did you have in the squadron? You said you had quite a lot of men, really, to look after.
I should say there would be, let me have a rough guess, would there be about 30 lorries and other type vehicles, the colonel's staff cars, jeeps and all that. And then there'd be, there's about a dozen vehicles in the recce crew. The band didn't have any vehicles to speak of, and they wanted anything. They would have a bus to take them. We had regimental bus. I suppose if you said something about 30, 40 vehicles, I think, you know, I'm just trying to think back, but that wouldn't be far out. And of course, then the other thing you had too is you had all the arms in the squadron armoury. And again, you had to keep going, popping in and check.
Personal weapons,
mm. to make sure they were all correct.
Presumably they also had to fire an annual course.
That's
or
right. You'd take
a
them
test.
On the ranges. Mm. Yeah. And you'd spend probably about a week on the ranges. Mm. And every man would have to fire whatever weapon he was. So that used to come in. There'd also be PT. They'd have to do their PE tests. And all that still came in. I also used to be responsible for the regimental boxing. So if I was into regimental boxing, I would sort of do the weigh in and do the programs and arrange it all, arrange the referees and the judges and all that, and the hall and the seating and all that would come under. So you're engaged throughout the year at different times on different projects. And when during the year too, we used to have the cadets come over from England, you know, and there'd be probably about 40 or 50 of them. And of course, they were handed over to me to entertain them for a fortnight.
What do you do with them?
Well, I've taken them out on the ranges, give them rides on the tanks, and also arrange with the RAF if they could take them up in one of these the planes they had then, just as or the helicopter, the heavy one.
Oh, the Wessex, would it be?
Take them up in that, and anything to keep them occupied. Take them up to Belsen and let them look at the Belsen graves and whatever.
But were these cadets schoolboys, essentially?
That's right.
They were.
But the thing is, you had to keep them occupied all the time. In other words, they're that age, if they could get, say, amongst some of the soldiers, and the soldiers would give them beer and whatnot, they could be quite a problem.
They'd be get into mischief.
They would. Mm. So you had to sort of keep them occupied. And so I used to try to get them out at 8 o'clock in the morning in a bus, take them out on an exercise, and arrange perhaps if there was infantry regiment, if they were doing something, if we could take them now and let them get in more. We'd take them on the ranges and have a shoot, different things, and try to get one of them in each tank going over the...
Did you ever see any of them again? Help recruiting, do you think?
I don't know if it did. I think it might have done, because they used to love it when they used to go back. They always used to say, well, thank you, it's been really... And the officers in charge said, you know, what a good job it is. They've really enjoyed it. Mm. You'd arrange for them to go to the cinema, an army cinema, see things, show them a couple of training films. You'd have a fortnight and I'd have a programme so that they were occupied the whole time.
And what about your own personnel? Did you have a turnover coming in and out of the squadron?
Not really, that was pretty static.
Mm.
But there was one or two, you know, it's amazing when you think some of the chaps about 18, how naive they are. I had a cook, he was Army ACC.
Cajun Corps.
That's right, but he was in my squadron. And he came to me one day, he was marched in both squadrons, so I made him. And I said, yes, what's your name? I forget what his name was, he was about 18. And he said, oh, sir, could I have your permission to get married? I said, you're only 18. I said, I've got a son, you know, your age, and I'd, you know, be a bit concerned if he wanted to get married so early. So I said, what did your father and mother say about it? Oh, they're separated, I don't see them. So I said, oh, so you, he said, no, I want to marry this girl. So I said, who is it? He said, well, that's the sister of Trooper Seaman's wife. Now, Trooper Seaman was one of the problems.
And was he? What was the matter with him?
He was always in debt and all that. And he was married, living not in a quarter, but rented accommodation. He was a problem. You know, you knew who your problem people were. So I said to him, I said, well, Seaman's wife, yeah. So I said, well, what's the hurry to get married? When did you meet her? He said, well, last Friday. This was probably about Tuesday or Wednesday. He said. So I said, well, that's a bit of a rush to get married. You know, if you only just met the girl, give it a bit of a chance. He said, well, I've got to get married. I said, what do you mean you've got to get married? He said, well, she's pregnant. So I said, and when did you meet her? He said, last Friday. So I said, my son, you've got a lot to learn, you see. I said, well, leave it with me, I'll think about it. Sent him out, he said, call the Sergeant Major in. I said, Sergeant Major, there's a cook wanted down in the south of France where there was a big exercise going on. And they wanted a cook. And this was for a month. So I said, put him on tomorrow morning, on the train, and away. I got right, that's...
Get him out of it.
For a month, anyway. And when the month was up, the day he got back, there was a ticket waiting for him. Go home, on leave, for a month. And that was all right. Straight on the plane, and away he went. I thought, right, that's 2 months I got. So the day he got back, I sent for him. I said, no, about this getting out. Oh, it's all right, sir. It's all off. I said, oh, that's very good. He said, I got engaged to somebody else while I was in England. I can't win.
Yeah, did he marry the girl in England?
I don't know if he did or not.
You didn't follow up?
No. Mm. Well, that was so far away anyway. But it was, those sort of problems you used to get. And it was a case of handling the difference.
Now you said that Trooper Seaman was one of your problem children in the squadron.
Yeah.
Roughly how many were there like Trooper Seaman who...
You'd probably about have three or four.
Three or four.
They were always in debt. They'd always come to you and say, can I borrow some money from the squadron funds? And I'd say, well, what do you want it for? I want to buy a washing machine for my wife. Washing machine. So I said, well, when I used to want a washing machine, I used to wait until I could save enough money and knew I could afford it. Because otherwise, you've got the washing machine, it's worn out by the time you pay for it. So I used to turn them down. I said, no, you go home and this sort of thing. But you used to get people like that. And then I'd get called out at night that a trooper so-and-so and his wife are rowing. So I used to take Pat with me.
Who's Pat? Oh, your wife, yes.
And the wives used to do that, you see. If there was a problem in the squadron, if there's a wife in concern, the wife, your wife, and then go and try to help as well, you see. And you call that once or twice in that respect, try to calm them down and try to get them back together and that sort of thing. And you had three or four people in each squadron who used to be the problem. And I had one come to me from C Squadron, posted to me. He had a Norwegian wife, and he'd been absent. He'd been in the guard room. I know when I used to be field officer and go around, he'd be in the guard room and always in trouble. So he was posted to my squadron, and I said, oh, God. So he was brought in front of me when he first arrived, and I said, look, I forget what his name is now. I said, I'm going to give you a clean sheet. You come here from another squadron. I don't want to know anything about you, what you've done in the past. I said, you're just joined me as a new person. I want you now to really buckle down and try to make a go of things. And I said to the Sergeant Major, I said, you know his reputation, and a lot of it rests on a Sergeant Major. If some Sergeant Majors know he's a bad and they always jump on him, the least chance, boom, and he's in trouble and he's on Jankis and whatever. But if you handle them right, you can say, right, you've done this, you know you shouldn't, I'll give you another chance. I said, do it again, you're in trouble. I said to the Sergeant Major, now, treat him and try to give him a chance. And so within 6 months, the chap was a Lance Corporal, no problems, anything at all. So those sorts of trouble people, troublemakers, a lot depends on the way they are treated.
It's a matter of handling them.
It is. Mm-hmm. And of course, the Sergeant Major, or the troops aren't. If somebody goes wrong, they jump on him straight away. Instead of getting them aside and say, look here, you're letting yourself down, you're letting the troop down. Any trouble, I'll take you around the corner and give you a good thumping. And that was the way he used to do it.
Was that still going on when you were squadron commander, or was it dying out?
I wasn't so much of thumping people. But there was still, like I did with the Sergeant Major, I said, try to give him I did something wrong, but give him a chance. Say, look, don't do it again, otherwise you're really in trouble. And it used to be funny because the chaps used to come in front of me, done things. And they used to tell me all sorts of things. I said, look, I've done all this. You can't tell me, the reasons and that sort of thing, because I've been through it all, which was an advantage for me. And I used to find if you treat the man properly and gave him a chance, he would respond.
And did you get lots of postings in then from other squadrons? Was there posting in and out going on?
The odd one.
Yes.
You know, they probably thought, well, this chap now, he's been in trouble and this sort of thing, so much, let's get him out of the squadron if they could.
Try him somewhere else.
This chap was an MT driver.
Yeah.
And they knew that there was a vacancy for an MT driver in H-School squadron. And they had enough in theirs, and we were looking for one. They'd post their worst one, not their best one.
Did you find that in your squadron, your HQ squadron, the average age of soldiers was a bit higher than in the Sabre squadrons?
No, not particularly. We had quite a number of the senior ranks who were older, but the average sort of MT driver, cooks, and admin staff, the only people that were older, I think, you found in the QM staff, the tech QM staff, because they had to go along to learn the job. And the order room staff, because that all came under you as well, you see. They were about the same as the other squadrons.
So I was just thinking that in your squadron you'd have really rather more specialists, wouldn't you? And that takes longer training to work up.
Well, you still had your, like other squadrons, you had your sergeant majors, your SQMSs, your orderly room people. I think they're all much the same. Each squadron had the same, like their senior rank would be a certain age, but the younger ones were.
So would you say it was about the same mix?
About
then?
The same mix, near enough.
You mentioned the regiment going out on exercise and so forth. What was the role of the regiment at that time?
We were in what brigade? There was a couple of infantry regiments up there in Oswald, and we were in the same brigade that went out, the Highlanders, who went out to Aden. We were with them. They went out to Aden. That's when they had 9 of them killed at the time, about the same time as was Mad Mitch then commanding that.
The Argyles.
Yeah. And our medical officer, no, our padre, he went out with them. And he got an MC at the same time as these 9 were killed. And I can't remember what brigade it was, but there were the infantry regiments, and we were the armoured regiment for that particular. I think we were in 2 Div. I think it was 2 Div.
What sort of things were you expecting to do if the balloon went up, if there happened to be a major conflict?
Well, we had set places to go to, and they used to rehearse these. On certain times, they would have an exercise, and that used to take the whole of BAOR. Right, the balloon's gone up, boom, and you've got to be out within 2 hours, out of your barracks and in your areas where you were supposed to be.
A crash out.
Crash out. Well, I remember one night, it was about 9 o'clock, and we had a cocktail party in the mess, and we had the Russian mission. I forget how many Russians there were.
Oh, I think you told me about that, about how you left to look after them.
But had I told you this?
I think so, yes. Yeah. There was a crash out, and you were asked, just look after them while we go.
That's right.
Yes.
And that was the sort of thing that we had to do. And you had to be out, drop everything, and get out within 2 hours. And they would then come, the brigadier staff or whatever, they would then come and check on different vehicles to see that you... It's no good going out there and you haven't got all your gear on board or this, that and the other. And there would be a check-up to make sure that you went out ready to fight.
With everything.
With everything, not just going out there as a show, oh, we're out here, and then you've got to go back to the regiment to collect your guns or whatever. And they were quite testing things, really.
And what about the sort of tactical exercises? Were you practicing mainly defensive or offensive?
On more defensive, actually. There would always be the enemy coming from the Russian side, and we would have sort of defensive line and gradually drop back until after, I think, a few days, and then it would be a case like atomic strike. They always used to finish up with the atom bomb being used, because we knew we couldn't contain them.